All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of the Corner Store Podcast. I'm very excited to talk to who easily one of the illest writers in the genre of hip-hop, hip-hop poetics. I would say probably the illest writer to also have NBA rings. I feel like that's probably safe to say. Someone who has meant a ton to me personally as an artist and also to the Chicago creative community. He now wears a very different hat, moving from Chicago as an entity, crew known as All Natural. The MC Cap D has had a robust professional life as well in the field of law. And now, has a very key role. I wrote it down my phone. I don't know what you'll fill me in, but has a key role in the organization of the Golden State Warriors. None other than David Kelly is in the Corner Store, sir. Salutes to you, man, and welcome.
Hey, salutes to you, brother. How you doing, man?
Good. It's great to talk with you, and I really mean that, man. You are. I wonder how you feel about this, or if you just walk around knowing that you're one of the illest. But like, in Chicago has produced, in my estimation, the greatest writers, period, in the history of any written genre. And you are in that skyline. You know what I mean? You are one of the greats that I think Chicago should, heap praise upon. Now and really forever. I wonder how you see yourself in like the literary and hip hop ecology when it comes to this city.
I have never thought about. Any MC always thinks of himself like, how do you compare against other MCs? I have never been so. I have ego, but I've never been so bold to consider myself amongst the Gwendolyn Brooks of the world, or the Sester, like so. Nah.
All right.
I appreciate you, but
no.
I can't go there.
All right. Well, for me,
he's in there. There's too many.
There are a lot, but I feel like you are in a special place. I think because you were in a moment in hip hop's history in the city where Chicago kind of finally found itself, and it was folks like you who I think helped gave Chicago an identity. I wonder how you feel about that then. Even like, can you claim that?
I was part of that. Obviously a lot of people were part of that.
Sure. Who are some of those folks you would throw in with you?
I mean, definitely Common, of course. Twisted, of course. In terms of, you're talking about writers. Wow. Juice, Ron Fest, people like that. And then later after that, the Lupe, of course. But the era that I think you're really focusing on, Common, Twister, Juice, Ron Fest, that's, right there.
Yeah. Well, and you, I think you got Chicago. I mean, Common, of course, at some point left, mm-hmm. and Twista was a very much a Chicago guy, but also became a national act. And mm-hmm. I think you stayed repping the city in a really important way, particularly at the moment in the culture's maturation. I want to talk about All Natural and Family Tree is kind of an extended collective. How did you first get involved with Tone, as a collaborator? How did you guys link up, and how did the idea of All Natural come to be?
Yeah. So, Tone and I really got cool through sports. It's funny. Both competitive, played all sorts of sports, basketball, baseball. And so that's really how we got cool.
Did you play high school?
I'm talking probably eighth grade and freshman year of high school.
Okay.
That's when we really, we knew who each other was, but we weren't in the same school.
Yeah.
And then in high school, we first started going to high school together.
And
Jack and Jill.
Where'd you go?
Homewood Fossmore.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, wow. Homewood has a great tradition of very talented rappers.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. definitely.
FemDot, I think of, you know, I know who's from out that way. South Subs generally has just a ton of very talented artists. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So you were saying Jack and Jill, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So we knew each other through Jack and Jill, which is the organization that we were both in, like sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade. And then freshman years when we had like gym class together, we used to goof off together. So that's when we really got cool. And then from there, it was DJing is how we really connected, and DJing house music. And so,
of course, in order to be a DJ, you really, at that time, especially.
That's right. That's what it was.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
And so then we used to throw parties together. So we would promote parties. It was Tone, my guy Andy C, who went on to do great things, and me. And so the three of us used to throw parties, house parties again. And then from there, I was always into writing, even like sixth grade, my parents put me in a writing class. And so at that point in time, I wanted to be an author. So all the way from sixth grade, or probably fifth grade, I wanted to be an author.
Who were you reading that made you want to be an author, or did you just like writing that much?
Shel Silverstein.
Yeah. It was his birthday, too. Happy belated to Shel, yeah.
Wow, didn't realize that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the name that really just pops out at me. Where the Sidewalk Ends. And I mean, quite honestly, Dr. Seuss.
Yeah.
You know, right? but Shel Silverstein was probably the person at that point in time who I was like, was really into like anything that he was writing.
Right.
I was reading.
Right.
So my parents put me in this class. And from there on, I wanted to be a writer. And so Tone and I, we were both DJing, but over time I got more into writing, and he was just a better DJ, especially when it comes to like skills and tricks and scratching. And so it was just kind of like, well, look, we already working on a lot of music together, you know, DJing, you know, kicking it. And so it was kind of like, well, let's be a group. Like I started producing, he was doing some producing too. And so it was kind of, so that's where All Natural came from. And so it was just the two of us while we were both at school. So I went to Morehouse, he went to Jackson State. From there we just continued to work on music all the time. And that's where All Natural was born.
Okay. And you guys first came out in what, 90, what, 90, what, 97, 6?
95, I think, was the first. 95 or 96 was probably the first 12-inch, first single.
Okay.
And then the album was 97, 98.
Okay. All right. And that's, that was, what was the name of that coffee shop that you guys took that photo in?
Mojava Cafe.
Mojava Cafe. Yes. Yeah. Which is sadly not there anymore, but that was, that was a great.
I love that spot.
Yeah. No doubt. So, all right. So, this record, putting out a record. I mean, you at that point you were putting out record independently.
Independently,
right?
Independently. So we were signed to Wild Pitch in '94.
Okay.
Really, off the song 50 Years.
Right. 50 Years, which samples KRS, right?
Yes. That's right.
My buddy and Idris and I have another podcast where we talk about hip hop, and we referenced that song just this past week. What did you have to get that sample cleared?
Technically, yes.
Okay.
Did we?
Always
kind of underground.
Allegedly, yeah. Right. But so you were signed to Wild Pitch, though.
Yeah. So we were signed to Wild Pitch in '94, and before we could come out on Wild Pitch, Wild Pitch actually lost the distribution, and so from there we decided to just put stuff out independently. So yeah, we started our own label, and then we just dropped. Dropped 50 Years as 12-inch, and then the album No Additives, No Preservatives on our own label.
Right. Okay. So what was the response to that record? I remember that record. I love that record. It has hits on it. 50 Years being one of them. But other songs that you put on now that I listen to now, I go back to now, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so 50 Years, It's Okay, Phantoms of the Opera, MC Avenger. Like, so the response was good. And then we had a book, you know, that came with it as well.
Ready to Live.
No, what was the book called? Writer's block.
Writer's block. What was the
fresh air?
Okay. Oh, maybe there's an essay in that book called Ready to Live, or is that a
yes? There is.
That's okay.
There is.
Yeah, I apologize for misnaming. I teach that essay still in my hip hop classes. And I love that you guys. I remember. I mean, I have the book and I have the CD. And I love that you guys put out a book with the CD. That kind of influenced a lot of my own publishing in a lot of ways. What was? I mean, you know, you said you wanted to be a writer, and you have a book next to an album. That makes perfect sense to me. But at the time, I had never really seen that before, and certainly not in that way.
The inspiration, at that point in time, I was working at Third World Press on the South Side of Chicago.
Yo.
And so we were really looking at, I was looking at Hakee from the Black Arts Movement. He created an institution, he created a bookstore, he created a school, all based on his art and the art of the people he was working with. And so that was the framework, that was the blueprint, that was the inspiration for pretty much everything we were doing.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I was working at Third World Press at the time, so I was already kind of thinking about publishing books and what have you. And so when we were working on the album, it was just kind of like, it was just natural that we should try to put a book with it. And also, there was a publisher called Shambhala Books.
Yeah, sure. Spiritual publishing company. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, a lot of Buddhists.
Published the really small books. Like pocketbooks.
Yes.
And one time I was working at the bookstore, and I noticed that the size of their pocketbook was the same size as a cassette. And I was like, wow, you could shrink wrap this pocketbook with this cassette, and you're in business. And so that the whole idea was like, we can do something the size of a cassette, or CDs were popping more at that time. So then we did the book the same size as the CD.
Yeah, yeah. What was so you were simultaneously working on an album and a book? I mean, were you writing these at the same moment in the same thematic?
Yeah. I mean, you know, with your first album, so many of your rhymes you've written from, you know, years ago.
Right.
Right. Like 50 Years was written, you know, like 3-4 years before the album came out. So many of those rhymes were written over a course of time. And then all those essays and short stories or whatever that are inside the book were written the same time. Just you know, but over you know, a couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, still, like, I think about that project a lot. And like I say, like, I you know, I teach at UIC, like, a hip-hop history class. And that, you know, when I that is, you know, very often a part of my curriculum is that text. In part because, you know, that essay specifically, of course, is kind of offering a very different narrative to an era that, you know, a lot of hip-hop was, at least in a mainstream and from mainstream media, was really about, you know, Black death. And right. And part of what I remember about this essay, it was like pushing us, I think, back to why hip hop started to begin with, which was a celebration of Black life, you know. Right. And I just appreciate so much of the insight that you lend in that book and on that album, you know.
Thank you. Yeah, that was the whole essence of that essay. You could see the change coming in hip hop. And I mean, it's easy to say the corporatization of hip hop, but I don't think it's that simple.
Right.
But even, you know, I always think about, like, the first N.W.A. song that they got popular for was "Express Yourself," which has a completely different message and meaning than a lot of the stuff that they're known for. They were saying stuff like they were. Even on later stuff, they were still saying stuff, but in a different, but a different energy to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's you could see just the way the art form was changing, and you said it perfectly, celebrating Black death. And I was thinking about Biggie, Ready to Die.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah. 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 Right. Yeah. So you go on from this album. I mean, you guys start to tour. You guys start to run around. I mean, like, in my estimation, you were, you know, like, Chicago kings, like you know, just you know, in a robust underground scene. But you guys were kind of creme de la creme, and then started to get some national attention. What was those next few years like as a touring artist, and just then continuing to produce music?
Yeah, so we would try to work the college radio circuit, and then our idea was that if we were getting play in college radio, then we could do shows at those same colleges where we were getting play on the college radio station. And so that, and also, you know, it doesn't hurt that college clubs have budgets, and they actually bring artists in. So that was our whole business plan.
That's right.
Was to hit the universities in the Midwest and then East Coast and wherever we could. And then we went overseas to England, Portugal, Sweden, and the Netherlands for shows a few times.
Wow.
So that time period, that's what we were doing. And I quit the job at Third World Press at that point in time. It was basically living, you know, show to show, and, you know, paying rent off a tour.
Right. And so, and at some point you also began, I mean, you started a label when you put out the first record, but, right, you know, you started to build from All Natural. There seemed to be this kind of communal extension known as Family Tree, which,
right,
is, you know, a number of other artists, incredibly talented. I mean, just some off the top. I know Mr. Greenweeds, I Am Moss. I know you had other folks in the mix and
Pacifics,
also Pacifics.
Primary.
Yo, right.
Yeah.
So what was that about? And that seems like that's such, I think of that time so fondly, in my own maturation, because that's when I was really kind of starting to get my start as an artist, and you guys certainly were folks that I looked at and I loved the collectivity of what you all were trying to do. In some ways it was Chicago's, you know, I hope you take this as a compliment, Chicago's like own Native Tongue Posse in a different, you know, like shared but also different aesthetics. But it reminded me of that kind of thing, you know.
I will never take offense to anyone to the word Native Tongue being in any way associated to anything that we were on. Yeah,
okay.
I mean, and that was kind of the blueprint for it. We always wanted to have a crew that, you know, building a label, but even more important than the label was just having a crew, and being part of a crew. You know, and everyone had their own style, their own lane. People were different. Nobody was the same as the other. We all had a mutual love and appreciation for hip hop. And I think we all tried to, you know, make sure we were talking about something without being too preachy, but, you know, just had some substance to what we were saying,
certainly,
but still saying very different things.
Yeah.
And coming from different places and a lot of A-type personalities, you know, who were stubborn and on what they were on. And that's just what we were about.
Yeah. Well, you guys did a lot of incredible work. And one of my favorite songs in Chicago's sonic history is the track you did with Juice, the Ill Advisory, I think, is the title. That, I don't know if you still get a lot of love from that record, but damn, that record is just incredible. And the record that's on, which is really like almost like a, it's like it reps the whole crew on that record in some ways, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite All Natural songs. And just, you know, Juice, it's very difficult for anyone in hip hop to say that they were the best at something. Juice was the best freestyler. Like,
period.
Period.
Right.
Period. Like, empirically proven. He just was.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah, and that was the first time we'd ever worked on anything together.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. You guys made a classic for real.
Yeah.
I guess who are so you know, you're obviously in close proximity and in community with Juice. Who are some of the other people that you know took note of their artistry, of their work ethic? Like, who were the people, you know, Chicagoans, non-Chicagoans that you kind of were taken with, impressed by, inspired by, even if you were in community with?
Yeah, I mean, Doug Infinite, Doug,
yo,
Infinite,
shout out
ID,
Doug. Yeah,
right. Rubber Room, Grav, people forget.
Yo. Yeah. What, I mean, because he dropped early, right? Like those records dropped early.
He was the first person from Chicago to have, I mean, I guess Common, but to have a deal.
Yeah.
You know, with some decent push behind it.
Yeah.
And so, and to actually drop a dope album. I mean, I think what Kanye's first production, I think, was
on that record. Right. That's right. That's right.
So not the first, but you know, but he was, he from that era, from that kind of, you know, setting.
Significant.
Those are the guys, especially locally, who we like had respect for, would see out, you know, and especially when, I mean, when you said like, appreciate their work ethic. That's why Doug was the first person I thought of. Like Doug was that kind of like, I've always tried to consider myself like a Renaissance man. Like I want to be good at this. I want to be good at this. I want to be good at that. Doug was that.
Yeah.
Doug could rhyme. Doug could produce. Doug was an entrepreneur, right? And he was buttoned up in all those things. And so he was that kind of dude to me. That's like, yeah, I respect this dude. Like I respect his hustle and everything that he's doing.
Yeah. Well. To speak of, that's a good transition because Doug is also in the Bay right now. I think.
Right. Right.
And you've been out there now for some time because you have a whole different life. In some ways now. I mean, you went to law school, I think at UIC.
University of Illinois.
Oh, University of Illinois, sorry. And you became a lawyer. And that, I mean, you didn't want to live as a rapper forever or what you
Yeah, I mean, so I was living check to check. Quite honestly, when I realized, you know what, kind of want to get married, have some kids.
Yo, like, it changes like, things.
Let me get a little stability going here, you know. And law school is actually always off in the back of my mind. My father's a lawyer.
Okay.
And he's a CPA and has a law degree. He never practiced law. So it was always kind of in my mind that you know, you could put yourself on a different path or whatever with a law degree. Like it just opens doors, it creates options. Who knows how you use it, if you even use it, but it's just something good to have. And so that's quite honestly the reason why I got a law degree, because I figured it was, I could write with it, I could teach with it, I could actually be a lawyer with it, I could go into business with it. And so just, right. I felt like it created a lot of options.
Right. And so you got the degree. Did you happen to fall in love with the law or what began? I mean, I know you obviously wanted a family and there's certain, you know, fiscal responsibilities, but.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoy the process. I enjoy the process of think. To me, being a lawyer is about the process of how you think. And I do enjoy, like, sometimes the work can be very dry, dull stuff. But the process of engaging an issue and working through it, I actually do enjoy that.
Yeah.
I enjoy right now being at a business where some people are marketing people, very creative in that way. Some people are salespeople, creative in that way. Some, you know, all different types of people. But somebody has to be there to work through, all right, what's the process by which we are going to engage this issue? What's the strategy that we are going to use to get from point A to point B and to try to navigate and working with all these various different personalities and skill sets and try to navigate everyone, you know, through something. And playing that role, I actually enjoy that role.
Right. Nice. And but you didn't go into like music law or entertainment law per se, right? You've kind of gone in a different direction, which now has landed you for the last number of years with, you know, with an NBA team, the Golden State Warriors.
Right.
Right. And so how did that come to be that you, I mean, also at a time where they, I think like not too far into your tenure there, started to win some rings.
Yeah. So I started off, I came out of law school in 2004. I went to a firm in Chicago, Katnushin Rosenman, and was doing just transactional work. And I was lucky enough that at that point in time, their transactional department had a subset that worked on sports work. And when I started, the sports work that we did was the White Sox and the Bulls, because we basically had relationships with Ron Story.
Huh.
And so just right place, right time, as that group, you know, grew and got more clients, I was able to work on some of those matters. And so I was doing most of what I was doing was just typical transactional work, but maybe 20-30% of it was sports related work. And then, so I was at CAD for 8 years, And then the Warriors were purchased, and we represented the ownership group that, that bought the Warriors. And so after that purchase, they were looking for an attorney to be the general counsel. And I was just right place, right time. I was, you know, outside counsel to the team. And so I was able to come in and work in, internally at the team. And that was in 2012.
Okay. Wow. All right. So you, and now you do more than just, I mean, you're not just a lawyer there, right? You've kind of taken other responsibilities.
Yeah. So I basically wear a couple of hats on a, on the business side. I'm just your lawyer. Like I have other departments that report to me, like human resources and community relations, which, you know, I'm glad to have that reporting because of, you know, about the work that we actually do in the community, governmental affairs. So those report into me, and then the law in the legal department. And so we're just doing what typical lawyers do at any company, negotiating contracts, managing litigation, what have you. But then I have a second hat on the basketball side where I do salary cap. And so on that, I report to our general manager and helping to navigate issues related to the salary cap, doing financial planning with respect to the team.
Right.
I've done some scouting in the past. So back to my initial love of basketball.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of full circle.
Right. And what is your title there now, sir, at the Golden State Warriors?
Chief Legal Officer, Business and Basketball.
Woo! Yeah, I mean, it sounds thorough, you know. And this whole time, of course, you know, you've also stayed putting out music.
Yeah.
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 And so what, I mean, and now, I mean, you put it out now. I mean, like recently you had a project with the Molman, which is great. Yep. To see you as a continued collaborator. And we've had Panic on the show. Shout out to the whole squad. But you don't really, I mean, you put it out under Cap D, but still make music with All Natural, or is that?
Yeah. So this most recent one we put out through All Natural.
Okay. Okay.
It was really in Panic and I.
Yeah.
But, you know, Tone was like, man, put it out through All Natural. Like, Tone's like, that's just my dude. Like, you know, like, that's my guy.
Yeah.
And so he was just like, look, basically, no disrespect, but the name All Natural carries more weight than the name Cap D. Put out through All Natural. Like, and it is what it is. And so, like, you know, so yeah. So, I mean, I still want Tone and I to, like, sit down and do an album.
Should.
Together.
That'd be great.
All Natural.
Be amazing.
And, you know, God willing, that will happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, the most recent one was All Natural / Pan.
And what is your artistic practice like now, given that you have not only this, you know, big job, but also have a family? I mean, you have, yeah. I think, three kids, yeah. And, you know.
I mean, I just carve out time. Like, and a lot of times it can be late at night. It can be, all right, wife's gone to bed, kids are in bed, it's midnight, I'm just going to stay up midnight till like 3-4 in the morning Friday night, and I'm just going to work on music, I'm going to write, got the headphones on, not bothering anybody, and I have, you know, I record at home, so I have, you know, home studio, so it's easy for me to just, if I get 10 minutes and nobody's in the house, all right, I'm lay some lyrics down real quick. You know, and so it doesn't, I can't let it interfere with the most important things, which is, you know, family and the job. But I make it as easy for me to get done as possible, so it takes as little time as possible.
Yeah. There's something weird that happened to my Zoom, but can you still see me?
Yeah, I can still see you.
Okay, I can't see you, but but it's recording, so I think we're good. Yeah, man, and I guess, you know, now, like, what do you, in terms of the music, I mean, I know that, you know, not too, at some point, the Warriors put out, you did a song for them during the playoffs a few years back.
Right.
So, you know, so these were, your worlds are integrated. Do the players come up and be like, yo, David, will you take a listen to my mixtape? What happens in that regard? Like, they know who they're rocking with?
Some of them do. Some
okay.
of them don't.
Right.
It's funny, Marquise Chriss on the team just put out an album, I think, about a month or so ago, which I haven't. I still got to check it out. But yeah, some of them know, like Draymond knows, Steph knows. You know, of the guys on the team now, that may be it. I don't even know if Clay if it registers with Clay, he can care less.
Word. Well, it's funny, man, because, like, you know, rappers, hip hoppers are like this anyway, on some, like, kind of Clark Kent Superman type of steez, you know, where, you know, you have your, you know, you walk around as a lawyer, as a businessman during the day, but at night you kind of, you know what I mean, like, whenever you carve time to kind of flex your pen, you know, and lyrical ability, you kind of have that superhero status, and I guess that's how Clark Kent does during the day, right? Just mild mannered, walking amongst others.
Mild-mannered by day.
Yeah. Right, like a whack and see, you know, murderer by night or what have you. You know, well, and man, I'll let you get out. I'll let you get back to your family. But do you miss Chicago, or you know, has the Bay move been, you know, good, not only in terms of professionally, but just for your family, for your head, for your sense of you know, I don't know, like you don't have to wear a winter coat 9 months out the year.
Yeah, no, I love the Bay, and I miss Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I love the Bay. The Bay, in a lot of ways, especially Oakland, reminds me of the South Side of Chicago.
Yo, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, the Panther influence.
Yeah.
You have the chip on the shoulder, like, you know, like your little brother to big brother, like Oakland versus San Francisco. Like, it has all of the elements of the South Side of Chicago for me. Hmm. And so I loved it. So in that way, it was very seamless. At the same time, you know, you can't beat the weather. You can't beat the mountains. You can't beat the Bay. You know, I can drive 2 hours to Tahoe if I want to see snow. Right. It's so there's just the natural beauty. And I used to hate on California. Like, as a true Chicagoan, to me it was like you had to hate on California and New York. So I used to hate on both. So it's kind of funny to me now that I live in California. But when I come back and visit Chicago, you know, especially before I moved out, I was living in Hyde Park, and like Hyde Park is just a special place to me. Chicago is just special. But Southside, Hyde Park especially, just, you know, it's, I was talking to somebody about, when you think about, especially for black culture, you think about leaders who over the last 40, 50 years have had a truly national following. They all have a connection to Chicago, to the Southside, and specifically to Hyde Park.
Hmm.
Everyone after X and King. You got Wafdi Muhammad, you got Farrakhan, you got Jesse Jackson, you got Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And that's not a coincidence. There's something special about just Southside Hyde Park, Chicago.
Yeah, no, that's right, man. Yeah. Yeah. Well, good, man. I'm glad to hear, and I'm not surprised that you stay repping in a really important and lovely way. It's great to talk to you, man. You must have been a little disappointed when the team moved their facility to San Francisco then.
Yeah, man. So I live in Oakland.
Yeah.
So on one hand, I'm part of moving the franchise.
Like, yeah, of course.
That's part of my job.
Yeah, right.
Is moving it. And I understand the move, like, you know, financially, it makes all the sense in the world. It's what you have to do in order to solidify the franchise.
Yeah.
Like, if I was moving a franchise to the Bay Area, I would put it exactly where the franchise is right now.
Right.
Right. I put it right on the water.
Right.
In the most beautiful arena that you can build. So, yeah. At the same time, being someone who lives in Oakland, yeah, it was bittersweet for us to move. Because I know what it means to Oakland.
Yeah.
It's not far, but it is far.
Yeah.
So that part. So, you know, when I think about, all right, well, what do I do? So I owe, right? I'm in debt. And so what are we doing in the community in Oakland? Now that the team is in San Francisco.
Right.
What are we doing authentically in Oakland that is more important than having the team in Oakland,
right?
To make up for the void. I mean, that's just, I look at it like that.
Right.
Because one thing about, you know, working for a sports team, you were kind of like holding the public trust. Like, people feel about their sports teams like they don't feel about anything else. Like, I tell people, like, when Apple, like, I love Apple. I love Apple products. When Apple puts out an iPhone, I don't say, man, we put out an iPhone.
Right.
It, you know, you'd be crazy to say we put out an iPhone. But when the Golden State Warriors win, we won the championship.
Yo, yeah, that's right.
So there's a different level of attachment that people have. And so you just got to make sure that you're cognizant of that and that you're respectful of that, even as you're doing the things that you think you need to do as, you know, from a business perspective.
That's right. And you alluded to it, but some of your job is about very, very much about that community engagement.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's great, man. It's great. Look, it's great to talk to you, man. It's a real pleasure. What are ways that people could stay in tune with what you're doing and with what the music is doing?
Yeah. So, I mean, my Twitter handle is CapD, the number one. Instagram, I think, is all Nat CapD. So I'm always working. I have like 5-6 projects, man. That over time I plan to put out. I Am Os and I have an album that we never put out.
Wow. Are we going to be able to hear it?
The plan is to put that out beginning of next year.
Yes. Wow. That's exciting. He's so talented.
Yes. Oh my God. He's one of the most talented brothers that I've ever been in.
Yeah.
Juice and I are finishing an album.
Oh my God.
I think when we're done, I think it'd be the best album that I've ever been involved in.
Wow.
Like, yeah. So it's Georgia Ammo, Dro did all the beats, and then it's me and Juice on all the rhymes.
Whew. Oh my God. People need it, man.
Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff, you know, that over time, you know, God willing, we'll just start just getting stuff out.
Great. Well, I know I'm excited for it, and I know the people are. David Kelly, CapD, my man, it's a pleasure and honor to talk with you. Thanks so much for being in the Corner Store.
Okay, appreciate you, bro.
Shout out our super producer, DJ Cashera. Big up boss man, Todd Manley. Thank you to our official Corner Store photog, Mercedes Zapata. Salutes to the Snack Door, Max. Also, please, y'all, follow our Instagram. It's corner_pod on IG, on Twitter. Tell us who you want to see in the Corner Store. And also, please consider dropping a couple of dollars into our Patreon account. It's patreon.com/cornerstore_pod.
The Corner Store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.